Ja.
And why are there Bernie bros and not Bernie hoes?
So there are.
Did we talk about having edibles at my holiday party?
And that I always underestimated is that men really like breasts.
Do you think I'm a Karen?
Valentine's Day is like New Year's Eve with nuclear weapons.
What you just said was so slut-shaming. And I wanted to
see how it's slut-shaming.
Welcome to the Femsplainers Halloween special. I'm Danielle Crittenden, and you should brace yourself for a scary episode. A very scary episode, because my guest today is a witch. It's with a W. I said a witch. An authentic witch, the last in a line of witches descending from Bohemia. What? You don't believe me. You don't believe witches exist. Well, I'm about to prove you wrong. Our witch, or maybe I should say witch-splainer, is based in Brooklyn. Yes, the Transylvania of New York. And her name is Veronica Varlo. She has long black hair, and she owns a cauldron and a broom. And if that doesn't already make her seem super legit, she has written Bohemian Magic, a book of witchcraft and spells. Now, our witch has celebrity clients. She is, you could say, a personal spell trainer to the stars. She's been featured on The Tonight Show, Playboy, and she's done corporate events for Chanel, Tiffany, and Vogue. She runs a coven out of the famed Chelsea Hotel in New York, as well as witchy retreats. She's also a self-described international burlesque showgirl. So I'm not sure how that fits into witchcraft, but I'm sure she'll tell us. Which is to say, all of this is making her sound less scary than I'd hoped. Maybe, I guess, she's more of a witch influencer. Like, even witches need to be big on social media today. Double bubble, toil and trouble. And hey, have you checked out my following on Instagram? I do endorsements for Bartender's Friend. Let's make your cauldron sparkle, and also empowering TED Talks, as in how to channel your inner witch. Okay, going to admit, this episode isn't even a little bit scary. I found a modern day witch, and she is empowering. Now, also, since this is the last podcast of the month, we're not going to have our regular cocktail guest up top. And of course, if we did, we'd be serving zombies. But instead, we're going to do our monthly listener feedback after our witch. I'll be joined by our new fabulous intern, Natasha Panapinto, who helps conjure up magic behind the scenes here. And you all had a lot of interesting things to say this month, and we'll read and respond to your comments. And just a reminder, if you're enjoying this podcast, we can't run this engine on empty. We rely on donations to Patreon, to our subscribers at Patreon. That's patreon.com/femsplainers. And if you become a subscriber, not only do we do a monthly cocktail party where we all get together, part of the Femsplainer community, but you get a monthly newsletter and you get to ask our guests questions for a special monthly podcast we do just for our subscribers. So yeah, you could have asked our witch about spells, personal spells. So if you want to become a member, and you can also get this podcast early and ad-free, please consider subscribing at patreon.com/femsplainers. We're grateful to everyone who supports this podcast. So now we'll go to our first sponsor of the show and then bring on Veronica Varlo, our very modern witch.
Hot flashes, irritability, intimate dryness, and maybe even unsatisfying sex. My femsplainers, does any of this sound familiar? If so, you're not alone. Bonafide is a women's health company dedicated to providing women with safe, non-hormonal, and clinically validated products that work. Bonafide offers an alternative to effectively relieve the symptoms that accompany hormonal fluctuations within their body, because every woman deserves relief without compromise. Bonafide provides safe and effective solutions to manage a range of menopausal, sexual health, and PMS-related symptoms. Bonafide offers women naturally powerful remedies to safely treat the natural symptoms that occur throughout their lives, from PMS to menopause and everything else along the way.
What I like about Bonafide products is there's one for every woman in our family. I like the Relizin, which gives me relief from hot flashes and night sweats. And for my daughters, there's Serenol, which gives them relief from emotional PMS symptoms, which, you know, I think we can all appreciate. They have many other products as well.
As a woman, what I like most is that Bonafide products provide women real relief without compromise. So don't waste another minute feeling less than your best. Give Bonafide a try today. No prescription is required. Go to hellobonafide.com. That's hello, B-O-N-A-F-I-D-E. Go to hellobonafide.com and use code FEMSPLAIN to save 20%. That's hellobonafide.com and use code FEMSPLAIN to save 20%.
Well, Veronica, welcome to the Femsplainers.
Thank you so much, Danielle. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited. Hello, audience, everybody. It's going to be great.
You are, I think, officially our first witch interview.
I saw that and I am very excited about that. I feel very good about that.
So, and I want to just be clear, you're not a Wiccan, which is a kind of feminist tradition. So you're not Wiccan, you're a witch. And I need you to explain how being a witch today works.
Certainly. Well, I grew up as a witch. My grandmother, Helen, passed down the traditions to me. She started, it was just a normal way of life being a witch for her. She didn't use the word witch, but that's exactly what it was. And her tradition, she learned from her mother, who grew up in Czechoslovakia, which is the area known as Bohemia. And she just had all of these traditions that made her really feel empowered, connected to the world, and just made life just magical. And so I grew up with her influence. And I think the best way I could explain being a witch is by telling a mini story of my grandma, perhaps, if that'll work. When I was a very little girl, I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and they were teasing me at school. And I came home and I was really upset. And it was springtime. And my grandmother listened to me, brought me out to this little dock on a lagoon and brushed my hair, just kept brushing my hair over and over. And she took the clump of my hair out of the brush and put a little rock on top of the hair. And she said, "I want you to just sit here with me in silence. Let's just sit here and wait." And all of a sudden, this bird, after what it seemed like a while had passed, this bird at springtime came down, grabbed a piece of my hair and flew off, came back, grabbed a piece of my hair and flew off. And it kept happening. And my grandmother said to me,
You see that bird? That bird is building a nest in your hair so that its baby birds are going to sing their first song nestled in your hair. Why do you care what anybody else thinks about you? And that gave me so much power as a six-year-old. It made me feel like I was something more than a person. It made me feel like I was worthy. It made me feel connected to the world. And sometimes I am a proud witch, and I love using that word because it's what I am and it's what I do. And at the same time, I hope that word doesn't make people afraid to hear what I have to say, which I feel is a very universal truth. And I feel if more children were raised that way, that giving them these lessons in nature and how they can be a part of this beautiful world, we would all feel like stronger people. And that's what being a witch is to me.
Okay. But that's almost like it's like a very modern version of a witch, like an enviro witch or even a little bit of a woke witch, because that story that you tell is not your grandmother casting a spell on the people who bullied you, which was where I originally thought that story was going to go. Instead, it was about, like, that's what I would want my witch grandmother to do, to be honest. But it was more, and this is what I found with your book, that all through, it's like a recipe book for spells. And it was all very much centered on self-empowering goals. So and you suggested that anyone could be a witch.
Absolutely. And before we continue with this, I'd like to go back because I loved what you said. And you were like, I would want my witch grandmother to cast a spell on the bullies. And I appreciate that. And I think it's funny. And at the same time, if you think about that, I don't know if that would have given me the same power, because there's always going to be bullies. There's always going to be people out there that you have to worry about or that are going to try to be an obstacle or say things about you. Because the thing is we're all unique. So everyone is going to have problems interacting with other people during their lifetime. It's just what it is. And her giving me that power in myself made me feel like I was untouchable and I didn't care what they had to say anymore. And that was more powerful to me in the end and in the rest of my life, because.
Did she do other sort of more traditionally magic-y things? Like, I think you mentioned she had tarot cards you have a cauldron and broom, like, So
they're in the,
behind
they're
you,
right behind me.
Because that could also just be the wise words of a grandmother who was actually did something very magical in that sense of summoning a bird, as it were. But what were sort of the more things that pushed this into being things that she would do and that you learned that were more, I guess, traditionally witch-like?
Well, the big thing that I was raised with is talking to the spirits. And in my version with my grandmother, in my version of my own witchcraft and spirituality, the big thing that my grandmother did was talk to the spirits. She talked to them like they were there in the room with us all the time, because they were. She would be, you know, smoking her Lucky Strikes and walking around the kitchen and waving her hands like wands and talking out loud to them. And then she would wait to get a response or a sign. And the spirits are a combination of people that have passed on that are related to us, our ancestors, people that have passed on that we were close with and loved us, spirit guardians that are watching over us, And also the spirits consist of us, like actually us, but us on the other side. Because I know that this is an interesting concept. Albert Einstein believed that time wasn't linear, and so did my grandmother. And she believed that right now, you are your age now, you're 5 years old, you're 80 years old, you're also on the other side simultaneously. It's not linear. So if that is true, and what Albert Einstein believed was true, then that would mean that there might be a way that you could communicate with you on the other side. And who to better help you and guide you than you on the other side, reaching back to you right now to try to help you on your path. It's a intense concept, but that is one of your spirits, is actually you in the future on the other side trying to also guide you. So I think that's pretty witchy. And I think that, and I think that is one of the biggest things she would do. She would do tarot cards with playing cards. She would bust open a pack of Liptons and put it in a teacup and do tea leaf reading with it. My grandmother was a witch of the working class. You know, she was very, very in touch with all the things you just have around a house to make magic and to work witchcraft with.
Well, I guess people always want to know, well, if I follow these spells, when your grandmother read the tarot cards, like, was it accurate? I mean, this would have been pre-cell phone. So did she just know when you're coming home from school? Or could she read your thoughts or predictions that were going to happen? And is that something that you do as well?
Yes, yes. She taught me when I was a very little girl, and that you can absolutely get into a space where it's almost as if you're in a cave. If you imagine, I think as children, we're natural witches, because no one has told us that we can't do supernatural things. No one has said to us yet, that's not really going to work, or you can't do that. That doesn't make sense. But children believe that automatically. Children are naturally have big imaginations, are in touch with the world. Their intuition is unbelievable when they're little. And I think that when I was little, her influence, she would just tell me stories, and she would say, I want you to imagine that you're in a cave, and there's a bonfire in the middle of the cave. And I want you to ask a question and see if there's any writing on the walls. And when I was a little girl, I remember one of the times we did this together, I didn't see writing, but I saw these big sunflowers all across like the whole entire side of the cave. And then moments later, my grandmother's best friend showed up and was wearing a dress covered in sunflowers. And just like little things that you can't, when it adds up so many times, it's not just coincidence. I believe that we have this deeper connection if only we'll let ourselves go there. Because I'm telling you, children have it 100%.
And this is something you teach, right? So
yes.
In your book, again, I know I sound a little disappointed, but I didn't, there weren't any spells like how I could win the lottery or take out someone. I mean, we once had, actually, I should say you're the second witch we've had on the program, but you're the first really official witch, because we had a couple of years ago, Sally Quinn, who's a Washington journalist, mm-hmm. and she does believe she's a witch. And she wrote a book in which she sort of reveals, this was very startling, as you can imagine, to her political and journalist friends. But she claimed she had cast hexes on a couple of people and they had died.
I don't do that.
Well, she said, I didn't mean for them to die, but you're saying, what? She goes, yeah, I can do that. And it was a little unnerving.
You know, it's interesting because I get asked this a lot about hexing and
negative stuff.
And, you know, my grandmother would never do anything like that because she believed that, and I believe that it just comes back to you. And what you live in, if I want to focus on the negative and focus on hexing people, then my life becomes that. It becomes this revenge thing. It becomes like, oh, I can't wait to see what bad things happen to this person. And my life is incredible. I have been so blessed with so many beautiful things, with friendships, with opportunities that have come out of nowhere, with incredible, beautiful love in my life. And I believe it is because I focus on that. And my grandmother would do a thing called the candle flip spell. And what she would do is it's like a return to sender spell. So it's not a hex, but if somebody is talking bad about you, I talk about this in Bohemian Magic. If someone is speaking bad about you and doing things to you and, you know, acting in a bad way, what you do is you carve their name on a candle, going from the top to the wick down the candle, or you can simply write return to sender. And basically what you do is you cut the very top of the candle off, so it's flat and there's no wick anymore. And then you hold the bottom up to a flame so that eventually the wax will melt and the flame will hit the bottom of the wick at the bottom of the candle. You basically turn it upside down. So you're burning a candle upside down now, and it's sending back all of the bad energy or all of the hurt or all of the things that they're causing back to them. Because what other people think about you is none of your business. It's their problem. And when you do that, you put the power back in you and yourself. And you say, you know what? Return to sender. This isn't for me. And I'm living my amazing life. I don't have time to hex people and worry about bad things like that. So I encourage everyone to do things like that and focus on your own amazing life, because it's just going to keep amplifying that.
And I'd rather be there.
Yeah, no, we all prefer Glinda the Good Witch. Let's pause for a moment and go to an ad for one of this episode's sponsors.
This is Walk-ins Welcome with Bridget Bettisi.
I love hearing people's stories of resilience and grit. This is why I created this podcast.
We are very excited to welcome Jim Gaffigan,
Yasmin Mohammed,
Glenn Beck, Tim Dillon,
Abigail Schreier,
Jeff Garland,
Ayan Hirsi Ali,
Sam Harris,
Heather Hying,
Jonah Goldberg,
Ben Shapiro,
Glenn Greenwald,
Sarah Shahi,
Colin Quinn.
If there's a culture of victimhood, then let's tell stories of grit and survival.
Subscribe and listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, who is coming to you? So who comes to Witch Camp? What, just in general, like, you know, what types of, is it all, usually all women? Is it get a few warlocks in there? What are they trying to find or do?
Well, that's a great question. Right now it has been mostly women, although there are some warlocks in there. And what's been really surprising to me, Danielle, is that it has been from ages of 18 to in their late 60s showing up to my retreats, and people from all different walks of life, all different backgrounds, all different types of people. And I think it's because I put out there that this is a welcoming space and this is a safe space, and people see videos and they see what we're doing, and it's word of mouth that gets out there. So everybody knows, like, you show up to Witch Camp, I am like your mom. I am going to take care of you. I'm going to show you how to do this. And I'm going to look at what your unique magic is and try to bring that out of you to the best of my ability, or hold the mirror up and show you what your power is if you don't know it yet.
So it says that, like, your client list includes Chanel, Tiffany & Company, Vogue, Marc Jacobs. So what do they, when these clients, what do they want from you? What do you do with these companies?
Well, I have, for some of them, I have done burlesque performances because I have performed burlesque all over the world. And that in my burlesque, I use sex magic and glamoring magic to be able to wow a crowd. So I am using witchcraft when I use witchcraft every single day. So I have done burlesque and performances for their events. Some of them I have done tarot readings for their events. And you know, I've been doing it for so long in the city. Everyone knows me and in the events and the fashion and the creative worlds of being this burlesque witch who also does tarot. So
I have this, I think it's a very funny idea of a burlesque witch, because it would imply that you don't actually have to take the clothes off yourself. They just kind of vanish automatically or fly off you automatically.
Danielle, I love that. And I think I'm going to use that as inspiration for my next number and dedicate it to you. I'll have to come back.
Do you have like celebrity clients who, and others who you're kind of, they're like a personal trainer, but do witchcraft with or for?
I do. And it is, I believe that if you keep working with particular people, I really feel like you can see a change and a lot of beautiful things happen. So yes, I do.
I kind of imagine that, obviously you're not going to name names, but like, I would just imagine that Gwyneth Paltrow might be heavily into
come on,
or open to doing something like that.
I'm ready. So yeah, you let her know.
And just so then out the other end of this, do people, give me some examples of when the clients, these witch camps, they come out of it, what are they getting with their spells? What are they achieving with their spells aside from knowing themselves better and the things that you've said? What if they don't work? What if you go like, I want to find love, because you have basically spells for everything in this book, for every aspect of life, from, you know, finding love or getting rid of a bad relationship, or even, you know, protecting yourself. This was actually one of my favorite, from bad vibes.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
My daughter lived in California for a while and she said, Mom, vibes are important. And she's right. So, so bad vibes. So yeah. So what are some of the examples of people that people gain through adopting the witch lifestyle, as it were? And what do you do if the things you are casting spell for don't happen? You don't meet Mr. Right or whatever.
Right. Well, I feel like spells work out always. I'm a firm believer that spells work out always. I feel like if you're casting a spell for love, like I have in the past, and it didn't happen right away, it wasn't that it wasn't working. It was that I had to be in a space where I could be present for that great love that I was calling in. And then it happened. Like I believe that spells work. I just do. And I think that the people that come to me at Witch Camp, and when we're working together and we're crafting and creating spells together, I have seen great change in people, in their attitudes, in taking their power back, in feeling more solid. And that's sexy. When you take control of your own life, and when you believe that you are in control of your destiny, and you have this supernatural support system, that's sexy as hell.
I would just rather wave a wand, honestly. That's what I was hoping. Like, there's a lot of self-work in this. And in addition to the spells, one of the things I was interested, like, I was not really joking about the broom and the cauldron, because you do mention that you have one, but mostly you're teaching people to use candles, incense, bones or hair, set up pictures of people you admire, which I realize It's a little sounds like Catholicism, you know, scents, candles, pictures of saints, and you're sort of praying to them for whatever it is that you need at that point, good health or whatever.
David Bowie, praying to David Bowie, Kurt Cobain.
But yeah, you actually suggest in place of saints, as it were, that you could just choose a dead celebrity as your spiritual guide. And that I was just like, whoa, what if they don't have time for you, or they're like, yeah, David Bowie, sorry, I'm busy over here with a much more important, you know, person than you. Like, how do you get that? And how in the way does it different from just praying, you know?
Well, I mean, I feel witchcraft is very, very old. Witchcraft is a nature religion that's been here since the beginning of time. So I believe that whether you call it praying or whether you call it talking to the spirits or whatever language you're comfortable in using, I feel like there could be some similarities. I feel like, you know, when I talk to the spirits, it is my version of praying 100%. They're around me all the time. I talk to them all the time. And I feel like that's something that anyone can do. I feel like on the other side, I appreciate your you know, worried about time or if you're important or not enough. But I think if there is somebody that you really connect with, because say you're adopted, say you don't have family, and you're like, but who are my spirits? If somebody raised you, like if you have like a celebrity or a famous artist or a famous poet that you really look up to, that you feel akin to, that influenced your life in such a powerful way, there is a connection. There is some kind of connection. It is a mirror to your own self, because if you see that connection, there's something in them that is a part of you. And that's why I believe, that's why I call these ancestors. David Bowie could be your ancestor if he speaks to you in that deep way. You know, so many people could be that, you know? So, I believe that there's a connection that's just, you don't have to wait in line. You don't have to schedule an appointment, you know?
So Veronica, one of your other hats, in addition to the burlesque showgirl, and witch teacher, you also, bill yourself as a confidence and sensuality coach. Does that require magic?
For sure. Yeah.
How does that work? So who comes to you, and how do you teach them confidence and sensuality in a magic
way?
I
do that through glamoring magic and through empowering women through sex magic and teaching them about that. And I feel like when we have this powerful connection to our senses and our body and the world, then it amplifies our own magic. There's so many things that, it's hard to explain.
Would you have like couples come to you and say, the magic is gone?
Yes, I have.
How do I get the magic back?
I have. And, you know, the thing is that reminding yourself about connecting with each other. And when couples have come to me, I do these parties in New York City where they set up a little tent temple for me, and people will come in to see me. And at these like wild warehouse, like underground parties in Brooklyn. And I had an experience with a couple that was really beautiful, where they came in and they said that they were having a lot of problems and they really wanted to reconnect with each other. And the simple magic of putting your hand on each other's heart and looking into your eyes, looking into each other's eyes, and just breathing together, just letting go of all of this technical world with cell phones and screens and things like that, and getting back to the magic to the two of you. And I do a rose petal ceremony that I talk about in the book, and an old bohemian magic spell that's a knot magic spell, because that's where tying the knot comes from. And it's when you take a long ribbon that is the length of your lover's arms and you cut it. It's normally, you know, between 5 and 6 feet. And then you each start to tie a knot, but not all the way. And you make a wish or say something that you're excited about in the relationship, something that you are grateful for, or something that you want to continue to do. And you, with your words, say it out loud to that other person. And then you blow your breath into that knot, and then you tie it tightly. And then you pass it to your partner, and they do the same thing. And you do this going back and forth until there is 9 knots in this ribbon, and you sleep with it over your bed. So it's kind of these promises and wishes and desires that are over you when you're sleeping, because sleeping is a very powerful, magical time. So when you're sleeping under something like that, adorning your bed, it's really powerful magic.
Well, I guess it's also a reminder as well. And what happened to this couple when they put their hands on each other's chest?
It was one of the most memorable magic moments in my life, because once they were sharing their things together and doing it, she started to cry towards the end. And he was looking at her and being very stoic, and she was just crying, and all this stuff came out. And he got up and he said, "I love you. I have to go to the bathroom really fast." And he got up and walked out of the tent. And she said, "He's crying." And he came back to me later that night and said, "I think you just changed the course of my life." Wow. By leading us through that, because it was their magic. I just guided it. They just needed a guide. It's not me. It's just me helping. And it's their magic. Their words together needed to be released and talk to each other about what they loved about each other, what they were grateful for in their relationship. And by physically saying it out loud and doing the knot, there's a power into it. There's a power speaking it and taking an action with it. And to have this guy come to me later on and say that he felt like that ritual changed the course of his life, and that he really realized in that moment, like, how important it was to fight for her. That's something I'll never forget. And that's something in some crazy Brooklyn warehouse, like, insane party, that real magic and true connection happened. So,
well, this has been super fascinating. I'm thinking of myself as an ancestor of David Bowie, thinking, does that mean I'm an heir to David Bowie too? Like, no, I guess I could just show up at your mom's house and say, he's kind of my relative. And
let's go.
And if you don't listen, if you don't give me some of that money, I'm going to cast a spell on you. All right, Veronica, this is wonderful. It's Veronica Varlo, author of Bohemian Magic, and you spell magic with a K, witchcraft mm-hmm. and secret spells. And I meant to ask you about that. Why do you spell magic M-A-G-I-C-K?
So that is differentiating it from magical tricks.
Right. And that, so, yeah, this is real magic.
This is real magic.
All right. Well, thank you. I don't know what was this, what you always ended spells with? Be it. What was it?
See it, be it, so be it.
Right. Same to you. I first learned about Rothy's shoes from a friend. I complimented her on a pair of ballet flats she wore to dinner one evening, And she lowered her voice and said, as if telling me a huge secret, that they were Rothy's and that they were the most comfortable shoes she had ever worn. Well, why the air of secrecy in telling me this? Because as women know, shoes that look fashionable and ready for Saturday night rarely are that comfortable. Shoes as comfortable as Rothy's generally have a thick, ugly orthopedic aesthetic to them, but not Rothy's. Pop Sugar named Rothy's one of the most comfortable and cute flats you'll never tire of wearing. And it's true. Rothy's fan favorite styles are available in tons of shapes and colors for every occasion, sustainably made with recycled materials like plastic water bottles, and they're fully machine washable too. And what better way to welcome the fall season than with new shoes? From Rothy's best-selling round and pointed toe flats to sneakers made for any adventure and loafers made for moments when comfort is a must, Rothy's has everything you need to start fall on the right foot. And now, especially that travel is opening up, many of us hope to see our families again over the holidays. And nothing is better to travel in the fall than the soft, plush merino wool of Rothy's exclusive autumn collection, which is featuring washable merino wool styles. They're incredibly comfortable, cozy, and 100% machine washable. And they come in a variety of colors, patterns, and styles. I think of my Rothy's sneaker style slip-ons as bedroom slippers for the outside. I got them in black, which means they go with everything in my winter wardrobe. I can wear them with jeans or even a knit dress and tights. And their unique seamless design and slightly stretchy material, not to mention their like feather bed-like soles, make them perfect for everything as well, from racing out to the store, walking the dog, or journeying to another city. I'll never remind removing my shoes for TSA again. Sorry. And good news for any mansplainers listening, Rothy's shoes aren't just for women anymore. That's right. Rothy's now sells men's sneakers and men's driving loafers. And Rothy's men line features the same level of craftsmanship as Rothy's women's line. Durable, washable, and better for the planet. Plus, rigorously tested for a perfect fit, wash after wash. So to help you welcome fall season in style and comfort, Rothy's is doing something special. That's right. They gave us a chance to share this super rare opportunity with our listeners for a limited time. Right now, you can get $20 off your first purchase at rothys.com/femsplainers. That's R-O-T as in Tom, H-Y-S, rothys.com/femsplainers. Head to rothys.com/femsplainers to find your new favorite today. Well, now we're going to go to the listener feedback section of the podcast. And joining me for the first time, making her international debut on the Femsplainers podcast, is our new intern, Natasha Panapinto. Hi, Natasha.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Femsplainers.
So glad to have you. I want you to tell our listeners how we found you or you found us, because I think it's a great lesson for anybody who's applying for a job to do what you did.
So I found the Femsplainers on Twitter and DM'd them. And after they ignored my DM for a couple months, my friend DM'd them a paragraph about how amazing I was, to which they did respond to and told me to reach out. So I reached out and pretty much told Danielle I would do anything. I would bring her coffee. I would edit. I wanted to work on the podcast and be a part of it. And now I'm here. So it worked.
It did work. That anybody who says you'll get coffee and you also clearly had listened to the podcast and wanted to be a part of it, which, believe it or not, a lot of people who apply for jobs don't even look at what they're applying to. So I applaud you on that. And Natasha, tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, what you're studying, where you are right now.
So I am a junior at the University of Colorado at Boulder. I am a major, my major is political science, and I have a minor in Spanish. I will be graduating the fall of next year.
Wow. And you want to go into the law, right?
Yes. Yes. The plan is law school, but I'll be fun, I'm sure.
You just, for some reason, you're a masochist, and that's why you want to go to law school.
Yes, exactly. Yep. That's why I spent this past summer in DC, in Congress. That's why I'm going to go to law school. I just really want to be unhappy.
That's right. You did. What did you think of your summer in DC? Aside from the unbelievable heat of the place, the swamp. Yeah, it really is a swampy.
Yes. Swampy people did place. Not oversell the swamp aspect of DC. I had a great experience. I was an intern in the U.S. House of Representatives, but the only thing I think I decided I definitely do not want to be a congressional staffer. So I've ruled out one future job.
Why was that?
Working 24/7 for very low money and honestly, little satisfaction considering it's extremely hard to get anything done in Congress and half the things you write up just get thrown out. So I do not think a congressional staffer is my future, but maybe a congresswoman. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then you can have other people waste their time.
Other people can do that work. Yep. Yeah. That would be the goal.
Okay. Well, we had some, welcome, Natasha. It's great to have you. We had some great feedback this past month. We're really going back a month and a half because we resumed the podcast after the summer, mid-September. So I think we'll just go through this listener reaction in reverse order, starting with our most recent podcast, which was Kit Shapiro talking about her mother, the legendary singer Eartha Kitt. And that was a story for anyone who didn't hear that yet. I mean, it was the opposite of Mommy Dearest. Kit had a wonderful relationship with her mother. She was Eartha was a single mother, very hardworking. And it was, for once, actually, it was really nice to hear a beautiful, positive tale of growing up with a celebrity. So let's go. Who wrote in first, Natasha?
Douglas on Twitter wrote, Orson Welles called Eartha Kitt the most exciting woman on the planet.
Well, Orson Welles probably didn't know, which I hadn't known, that Eartha Kitt, for all her sexuality on stage, I mean, she did the definitive and most iconic recording of Santa Baby. As her daughter describes it, Kitt said that when her mother came home, she was all business. She was not only was she not sexy, she wasn't interested in sex. She didn't have boyfriends. She took off her ball gowns. She put on sweats. And she had a very troubled past, and she got divorced. And I think she didn't really want a lot to do with men, but she was a very devoted mother. So this whole sexy Eartha Kitt was for the stage only. So I enjoyed learning that. And then I think also I see the next comment coming up, Natasha. She also, Kitt told us about her mother's views on race. Eartha Kitt herself was half black, half white. And she said to her daughter that she felt race was the least important aspect of a person. She was a big champion for black rights. And, but she didn't like what I think today would be defining yourself by your skin. She celebrated differences. She celebrated other cultures, and she thought it was very limiting to just think of yourself in terms of your race or your sex. So I think Sheldon, beloved Sheldon, super fan Sheldon, had something to say about this.
Yes, he wrote, "Amen. It's sickening to see so many people working against this basic principle these days. Critical race theory does just the opposite."
Yes. So thank you, Sheldon. Then going back again in reverse, we did our 70s show with both my husband, David Frum, who people who they know him as a pundit don't know that he actually wrote a history of the 70s. And so he came on to talk about that. And then Erica Schickel, who is the daughter of the quite famous movie review critic, Richard Schickel, she wrote a memoir called The Big Hurt. And it was about growing up in the 70s. And as we discussed on the podcast, it was, we think of the 70s in terms of women's liberation, the sexual revolution. But if you were a kid, it was a lot different and a lot darker. And you just felt all the adults around you left the room and left you on your own, and you were sort of, you just kind of grew up feral. So Erica wrote about that, and we got some really good comments.
Susie on Twitter wrote, "I was a regular babysitter during the years leading up to the 70s. Oh, the stories I could tell. All filters came off of those married couples. They'd pretty much say and sometimes do most anything in front of us teens."
Yeah, for some reason, the adults of that time thought it was really good to let it all hang out in front of kids. Streaking, Natasha, I don't know if you know what that is. Do you know what streaking is?
Streaking has stuck around, I think.
Can you imagine, like, adults, you know, doing it? Not weird.
Yeah, not among adults. Yeah, no.
Or skinny dipping with each other. Or one thing, I think I wrote this to Susie on Twitter. I reminded her that at every house, if you babysat, which of course I did, every girl seemed to have done, age 14, you would go to somebody's house and they would have copies of this book called The Joy of Sex, like on their coffee table. It was a very graphic book on sexual positions, but very couples oriented. And it was illustrated with these lines, drawings of like hippies, really hairy 70s people in, you know, various positions. And if you were a 14-year-old looking at this book, it was everything but the joy of sex. It was maybe a great birth control, because you never wanted to have anything to do with it when you saw hairy adults in weird sexual positions.
Yeah, that does not sound nice. I did not have that experience at the houses I went to babysit. I can say that for a fact.
Well, and I guess also you guys now, I mean, this seems almost archaic that here I am complaining about line drawings of hippies having sex. And, you know, you guys have Pornhub on your phone. So it's not a lot better.
Oh, my God.
All right. What else do we say? Sorry, Natasha. No.
Robbie on Twitter wrote, "Great podcast. My experience was way nicer than Erica's. We roamed the neighborhood, played with our friends, rode our bikes, and swam at the pool. Our lives were domesticated, feral lives. It was tough listening to her story, but I'm glad I heard it."
Right. I felt there was that upside, that if your family was stable, which hers was not, many were not. That's when divorce started happening big time. But when you were, as a kid, left to your own devices, the opposite of helicopter parenting, it could be quite wonderful. I mean, you could do whatever you wanted and your parents didn't know. And then you would just show up for dinner. There were no cell phones. So it could give you a big feeling of independence. But it also, as in Erica's case, kind of could force you to grow up a little too fast, which was the dark side.
Nance on Twitter wrote, "I left my narcissistic mother at 15 in 1974, throwing myself on the mercy of the foster system. I had no idea what the 70s were. I was way too deep in my little tree to even know there was a forest."
Yeah, well, I guess all kids are like that, right? You only know what you know, and only when you look back on it do you see the patterns of a decade around you taking place. Okay, so then before that, we had something called 2+2=, You're Oppressing Me. It's our back to school special. And this is where we had Bonnie Kerrigan Snyder, who is the author of a book called Indoctrinate. And she also is at FIRE, which is the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, which does a lot of very valuable free speech work on campuses. And she was talking about how the politicization that we see on college campuses is now happening in lower and secondary schools. And up the top of that podcast, we had my beloved co-splainer, Christina Hoff Summers, come on and talk about a disturbing trend of boys dropping out or even not applying to college. So that there's been this huge fall off, and it doesn't matter. It crosses demographic lines. It crosses socioeconomic lines, that boys, I think at a rate, almost not of 2-to-1, but at a very alarming rate, are just failing to complete or show up to college. And nobody's really alarmed about this because what? Men, I don't know. But anyway, so we had a lot of, it looks like, good comments on this show as well.
Yeah. And when I first heard this episode too, I was a little skeptical. I was like, oh, but there's so many boys in college. And then I really started to look around my campus. In my Spanish class of 20 people, I have one boy in it. In my most of my political science classes, it's at least like 70% girls to 30% guys. They are not around in the same numbers that I thought they were.
That's so interesting. So you just saw that in your own,
yeah,
your own school. And do you feel there's cause for it in the atmosphere of the learning, or do you find it's negative towards men?
In the atmosphere, that I definitely, I looked for that. I didn't feel like that existed here, at least at my school. So I don't really know exactly why they're not here. Especially, I mean, Boulder has its big, it's a big party stoner school reputation that I would assume would attract a lot of guys, but.
Oh, is that what you're saying about men? They're just like partiers and stoners.
Oh no, I'm part of the problem.
You're part of the problem, Natasha. I thought you were going to say, we could even make it more sexist. You know, it's like, we have a lot of science STEM classes and I thought we'd have more boys here.
We also do engineering and business are our biggest programs.
And I guess, but you're not in those. So you can't go and do a hand count of how many boys are in those classes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, so we got some, actually, it looks like we got some kind of angry men writing us. What did they say?
Mark on Twitter wrote, "I wish we'd stop pushing people into schools, not just post-secondary, high school and earlier. Those years are a complete waste of time for lots of people. They're filled with humiliation and emotional scarring, and almost nothing is gained from them. Most teen boys would be better off in the labor force at that age. The best thing we could do for them is get them out of school and making some money, growing their own personal capital. I'd give anything to not have gone through 12 years of that horrible torture. Insane that we have to pay for it."
Well, Mark, it sounds like you had a bad childhood in the 70s. High school in the 70s, I've got to say, in the history of high school, there has never been such bad high school as high school in the 70s, where that was often a complete waste of time. I was speaking to stoners, Natasha. I just remember shop was about a bunch of boys making hash pipes, and that's what you did in shop. So I could see that, but I think, Mark, this is, you're taking a kind of extreme view here to regard all school this way. All right. What else do we have, Natasha?
Ryan on Instagram wrote, "Honestly, I think we should be more alarmed at the fact that college campuses won't do anything to specifically help boys because they're afraid that people, primarily women, will complain about men having enough privilege as it is than the fact that not as many boys go to college these days." Then Michael on Facebook wrote, "What would be the point of men going to college? So much bother with education and degrees. You're either born into love or wealth or without. Most of us who are born outside such fears are unwanted everywhere."
Yeah, another despondent male.
It's making me sad.
It's making me sad too. But I think, Michael, you've got a point in that, not that you're unwanted, but that getting into college and really almost any college these days seems to be less about talent and even grades, but more about certainly wealth, connection, quotas. So I can see, I know how frustrating it is for so many kids now to apply for college. And then you're greeted by the cost and the debt. And I think probably men might even be a little ahead of the curve on this, is that they're figuring out, why bother? Why spend $50,000 a year to study, you know, critical gender dog studies and not come out with anything that is actually going to be useful to me, you know, IRL. So there's a point. It looks like we had one more listener reaction, which went back to a show we did last season, but it was a fascinating topic. And so I thought this comment was really, really interesting. It's a bit long, but do you want to read it, Natasha? Because I thought these comments were really, really good.
So Ian messaged us on Facebook. Danielle, I was a few chapters into Carol Hooven's fascinating testosterone book when I noticed that she was the latest Femsplainers guest, so I had to listen. I've been a keen consumer of popular science books since I was a teen. I'm now 41, and I remember the 90s, when the most vocal objections to biological facts, particularly those pertaining to human evolution, came from maniacs on the religious right who were pretty easy to ignore. Then, about 20 years ago, I went to hear Richard Dawson speak at the Edinburgh Book Festival. He read aloud an essay about some strange postmodern theorists who'd started launching assaults on well-established scientific ideas for political and ideological rather than scientific reasons. When I read Pinker's The Blank Slate, which covered some similar ground a few years later, I still thought of the stuff as a sort of funny academic sideshow. It certainly didn't crop up in everyday life or make it into the news. And there was no Twitter, of course. Nostalgic sigh.
Yeah.
Little did I know that. Little did I know that between them, Dawkins and Pinker had given me a glimpse of the coming culture war and the strange denial of human nature that underpins so much of it. I could never have anticipated that large swaths of the general public, including some personal friends, would one day adopt a kind of memeified, Twitterized version of the anti-scientific dogmas I've read about 2 decades ago, or that they developed such a creepy intolerance for inconvenient science and those who promote it. I now know people, some of whom used to be sane, who won't accept the idea of heredity with respect to human intelligence, behavior, gender, you name it. I'm told by some that biological sex, not gender sex, is an outdated fiction, and that while other animals clearly have hardwired gendered behaviors, humans have been lifted by some miracle out of the natural order and have none. There is something deeply religious about all this. Humans are uniquely exempt from innate, immutable characteristics that are undeniably present in other animals, including our closest relatives. We're special. Evolution only applies to us from the neck down. Praise be. Anyway, all of this venting is merely a preamble to my main point, which is that your conversation with Carol was brilliant. She's as engaging a speaker as she is a writer, and her well-advised reluctance to get into the politics of her subjects and simply let the cool, hard science speak for itself contrasts refreshingly with the craziness that often accompanies discussions of sex and gender these days. After reading her book and hearing her speak, I felt better equipped to deal with the neo-creationists of the hard left and re-energize in my determination to maintain my beliefs in the equality of the sexes and the dignity of trans people without pretending that there are no interesting biological differences between us. Thank you for all that you do.
Yeah, that's, thank you, Ian. That's a great note. So Carol Hooven wrote, she's a Harvard biologist, and she wrote a book called T about testosterone and just this one hormone and how it affects everything in terms of the differences between men and women from our very earliest moments in the womb. And that is, as he points out, that's not to say that the sexes can't be equal, but ignoring the differences is also dangerous because then you can't, I mean, we're seeing this right now with trying to ignore that there is anything called a biological woman when it comes to some of these trans debates, that, you know, if you say you want to be a woman and you then want to compete in women's sports, that you should be able to do that. And there's no difference because sex is just, it's in your head. And it has nothing to do with your muscle development. It has nothing to do with your strength. And part of feminism and the women's movement has been trying to compensate for this, bringing women's health, women's educational concerns and differences to the fore. And if you ignore that there are these differences, then you, in the end, you penalize both sexes, but you especially, I think, penalize women because we need to understand how we're different from men if we are going to achieve our greatest potential, if that makes sense. I mean, how do you feel, Natasha? Do you feel like we shouldn't acknowledge any differences between men and women? Do you feel that that could be thwarting to you to suggest that there are female characteristics?
This subject, honestly, for me, in the beginning of the movement, I was completely for rendering like all like the differences and for being inclusive and making it trans people, if that's how they wanted to be identified, then I was all for it. But then I, like, from this episode and like going that I do see that it's at this point that it's not that the activists are making these decisions absent of the will of the community as a whole, that the differences of my biology to what a man is born with are there and they're real. I support anyone who wants to get surgery and change their biology, but that still doesn't change.
Yes, of course. You want to recognize people. You don't want to discriminate against people. If somebody tells you they're a woman or they're a man and it's the opposite of the sex that they were born with, you're fine. If that's what you want to do, that's how you want to live your life, be fine. But that is what is happening is that is changing. And now those demands are actually erasing or attempting to erase a lot of gains that women have made in feminist, you know, in women's spaces and feminist spheres. And so it's a very difficult moment we're in. I mean, when I was writing about these subjects in the 90s, I was worried that the feminist movement of that time was leaning too heavily into our differences, that there was a kind of Andrea Dworkin, that women were so potentially weak, so easily cause distress, that we couldn't handle ourselves, that we couldn't handle a man's glance or a man's joke or something like that. We see that a little bit now,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But it was very strong then. And now it keeps going back and forth with various movements and various ideologies. And that's why I think Carol Hooven's book is important. And anybody who writes meaningfully about these biological differences without political agendas, helping us to understand these differences is so important, because yeah, they are not political. They are biological.
It reminds me of, I always complain to my male friends about like the pink tax, of just how much more in a lifetime a woman is going to have to spend on products like tampons, on birth control, on different things that you have to do because of the inherent but biological differences, where I think when you ignore those, then it takes out of account that people who are biologically born as a woman have these extra like payments and money that they have to spend to take care of their needs. So I think that not recognizing that difference, I don't think that's good for women or anyone.
Well, Natasha, what you mean to say is people who menstruate. I think,
yes, yes.
I think it's really wrong to say that that's an essential trait of being a woman. Just because you have a uterus.
I don't, yes. It's an essential trait.
It's like uterus shaming. You're uterus shaming, Natasha.
Well, when someone else gets their period as much as I do, then they can complain about it.
Yeah, I always feel like you want to be a woman. Oh, bring it on. Bring it on.
No, no.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, Natasha, thank you for reading our listener reaction. Thank you for being part of the podcast. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you for joining this Halloween special. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. The Femsplainers is a weekly podcast carried on the Podcast One Network. Nat Frum produces and edits our audio and video. You can follow us on Twitter and FB at Femsplainers and on Instagram at Femsplainers Podcast. We love hearing from you. You can reach out to us via email at contact@femsplainers.com. You'll find all our episodes and more information about me and the podcast at femsplainers.com. And remember, we rely on your donations to keep this podcast going. So please consider supporting us at patreon.com/femsplainers.